pre-recorded from his basement. It's the Kyle Selege Variety Hour. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selege Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bills Wire. I am your host, Kyle Selege, and today we have another great podcast for you. We have the review and our takeaways from week two of Buffalo Bills training camp. It's now in the books, their first full week. It's passed. They're entering week three here in the first preseason game, but Bills Wire will have a podcast later this week previewing the preseason game against the Colts. So today we will just focus on our takeaways from week two of training camp. And then also, we'll have everyone's favorite segment, Buffalo Fight Night, is back at the end of the podcast, where we talk about the scuffles that happen at training camp and who would win if they were sanctioned MMA fights. So joining me today to talk about these topics, we have the crew, the OG crew. They're back. It's Justin, DeLauro, and Rich. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Stellar.
Good. I set that up perfectly to get you guys talking at the same time. And Rich, I'm sorry, I just gave you one name. You're just Rich, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. I'm like Prince. I'm just a symbol, I guess.
It's Richie Rich. Rich Kowalski.
Thank you.
So, there. We got the full name. We're killing it right off the bat here on this week's podcast. So, we're not going to do any, like, small talk. Last week I had Hofbrauhaus updates. There's no Hofbrauhaus updates.
Not for a while.
Actually, there is. Last Monday, after we recorded the podcast, I went to, I think it's 190 Scott Street, or it's somewhere on Scott Street.
Beautiful neighborhood.
Yeah, just wonderful, beautiful neighborhood. To get an update on the construction of Hofbrauhaus. I wanted to see with my own eyes what's going on. And I sent you guys the picture. It is does not look like it's going to open at any point during August.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't.
You'd hope that the inside there's more activity going on than the inside.
I think the inside is done. From what I understand, the inside is done for the
then
most part.
Then I take
part.
Back what I said.
But the outside is just, it looks like they haven't touched it. They put up a piece of wood on the roof where the logo's going to go. And then they put a fake window in the corner that looks nothing like the concept art. And that's about it. I was going to tweet that picture and then the picture of the concept art, and it was going to be you versus the guy she tells you not to worry about, just because there's no similarities right now. But, hey, they can surprise me. I'm still looking forward to the Hofbrauhaus. A little update, my friend, who I told you guys about last week, is going to try to be a bartender there. So, guys, Hofbrauhaus is impacting my life in more ways than one. It's become a central theme in my life the past few weeks here. So, Hofbrauhaus. I tweeted at them last week. They didn't interact with me. Mm. So, this is a call out to Hofbrauhaus. Sponsor the podcast. You sponsor FC Buffalo. I mean, I have no bigger dream in my life right now than to say, welcome to the Kyle Selege Variety Hour, brought to you by Hofbrauhaus. Mm-hmm. I could die happy. That could be the final podcast, and I'd be going out on top.
That's so there who we'd be canceled.
We'd be canceled the next week. Yeah. But then Hofbrauhaus could just pick us up, and we could just talk about all things Germany and Hefeweizens and Currywurst. So that's enough Hofbrauhaus talk for this week. We'll have weekly Hofbrauhaus updates from here on out until Hofbrauhaus opens finally. Let's get into Bill's training camp.
Let's do it.
We had a boring week, guys. Just going to say it flat out. Not a very eventful week at training camp. No real breakouts from this week. No real stars, guys who have taken the next step. A few guys have continued to underwhelm, and we'll get into that. And I don't want to say this guy, who we're going to talk about first, has underwhelmed, but I guess some of the problems that fans wanted to see fixed, especially at this point in training camp and so close to the regular season and preseason in particular, we wanted to see these problems gone. We did not want to see them resurface, but here we are a few days before the first preseason game, and Josh Allen, he's still struggling with accuracy, which I've said it on past podcasts. I think it's an overblown narrative. I think his accuracy, I don't want to say it's good, but he has other tools that can help him overcome his lack of accuracy. But last week at training camp, I guess his accuracy issues really made themselves more apparent. The red and blue practice, I guess his accuracy, the red and blue practice at New Era Field that happened last Friday, I guess his accuracy was kind of all over the place. A few days he had issues throwing the ball over his offensive line, which is issues you heard with Russell Wilson a few years ago when he was a rookie, Baker Mayfield, you know, just these shorter quarterbacks who aren't able to throw the ball consistently over their offensive line, typically not an issue with 6'5 or 6'6 quarterbacks, but here we are with Josh Allen, who's having balls swatted down at the line of scrimmage. He attributed that to defensive tackles cheating on the drills. They're not really rushing. They're just kind of standing back with their arms up. But in that case, if they're standing there with their arms up, you should be able to easily throw the ball over them. But
you'd hope.
You would hope so. So, guys, I'll go to you first, Rich. It's this close to the regular season. Josh Allen, I don't want to say he's regressed, but he had a very good first week of training camp. And this week, it's kind of been, yeah, he didn't look great. He didn't look stellar. He looked serviceable, but he didn't look like he's taken a massive step from his rookie year. So is that concerning to you as we get into the preseason here?
I mean, it's slightly concerning, but at the same time, they still haven't played these four preseason games that are really going to bring people, you know, game speed is much different than practice speed, where you're having guys doing things that you don't see in practice or coming at you in a way that you're going to get hit when in practice you're not, you know, not at risk of getting hit. I think one thing, I think it was Jordan Phillips had two deflected balls at the line of scrimmage that led to interceptions. It was like three straight days Josh Allen had a deflected pass lead to an interception. You see guys like that, Jordan Phillips, who's 6'6", you know, has an inch on Josh Allen or so. These are guys that he's going to be facing in the NFL, so these things he does need to squash out before the season does start, or even maybe during the season. But Josh Allen really needs to get that handled in these upcoming preseason games, and that's what they're for. You know, people can argue that two preseason games would be better, but I mean, for Buffalo, honestly, right now, I'd rather have four, because you want these things getting squashed out, especially with newer receivers and newer people out there, where you need to build that chemistry and know where they're at all times. I think these preseason games are going to really help that. So I'm not too concerned, but it definitely is an area of concern if, you know, you get done with the preseason and he's still having these issues.
Yeah, and it's strange that this whole not being able to throw over the offensive line thing, it's strange that that's an issue now. He went through his entire rookie year, and that wasn't an issue. He was able to consistently do it. Now we're in training camp, and it's, again, it's not a huge issue, but it's something that, like, you don't want balls to be consistently swatted down at the line of scrimmage, especially when you're a 6'5 quarterback. And the fact that that's happening on a even semi-regular basis, like you said, Rich, that's something that needs to be squashed out quickly, especially because that's a new issue. That's something, where did he pick that up? Why does he have that now? So let's hope that gets squashed out. And you can partly attribute that to what has been a revolving door on the offensive line. There's been just linemen going down. Mitch Morse is out. I know John Feliciano had an injury. I don't know if he's back yet, but he walked off the field at the New Era Field practice last week with an injury. So D'Lo, just to you, do you think Allen's struggles with getting the ball over the offensive line, do you think that stems from the revolving door that is on the offensive line, or do you think there's something else there?
I mean, I think that's going to be part of it. The new line is going to be big. He might have four guys starting in front of him there, brand new, and they're obviously revolving people in and out who might not even, you know, see the field. They might not. They're not even going to be part of the 53-man roster. So that's part of it. He has a new receiving core. I mean, if you can name who the Bills' starting tight end is right now, you'll get, I don't know, a penny.
Tommy Sweeney.
Is it Tommy Sweeney? I mean,
I don't know.
Currently, yes.
It could be. Yeah.
I mean, right now they really don't have a tight end. They, you know, their top two receivers are new. They're still working out some things. Is it a little concerning that he can't throw over the line? I mean, he's still working through the accuracy issues that we know probably stem from just not having his mechanics right. So he's trying to get that down now. We'll see it as a positive. I'll look at it as half glasses half full right now. Let him make his mistakes now. Let him try and work through some things. If we're still looking at this on, let's say, August, you know, 31st, you know, we're still having this discussion about him throwing at somebody's hands, then I'd be a little worried. But right now, I think it's a smidge early to hit the panic button yet, you know, at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping, that over the next little bit of time, these things, as he gets more familiar with his receivers and the line starts to get everything in order and acclimate to each other, that they won't have so many problems or so many issues with everything kind of being seamless and working together as a group.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a new line as it is. There's going to be four new starters on the offensive line already. That's assuming everyone's healthy. And now with everyone or a number of players going down with injury, I mean, even the chemistry that had started to be developed is now out the door. So it might be a little overblown. I'll say it. I might be overblowing this a little bit, but it's August 4th, and it was an uneventful second week of training camp. So we need to talk about something with Josh Allen. So I'm going to attribute it to the revolving door in the offensive line, just because it wasn't an issue last year. Just as somebody who watched him practice and who watched all the games, you guys too, that wasn't an issue. He was always getting it at least over the offensive line. Was he getting it there accurately? That's a different story from time to time, but he was always at least getting it there, at least getting it past the line of scrimmage. So it's a new issue, and I think it can be attributed to just the revamped offensive line and then the injuries to the offensive line. So like you said, D'Lo, if we're still talking about this a week before the regular season, that he's throwing it at people's hands, yes, then we have a major issue. But right now, it's early. Let the offensive line get back to full strength, and then I'll work the kinks out. But just another thing that I want to talk about is the improvements that he's made. A lot of people who are at camp are tweeting that he's using the check down more often. He's not always trying to play hero ball. He's not always looking for the play down the field. He's really open to just checking it down to a playmaker 3 or 5 yards down the field and letting them make a play. And Cole Beasley, as we talked about last week, he's really developed a nice rapport with Cole Beasley. And on a recent appearance on Good Morning Football, Cole Beasley talked about Josh Allen, and he said this.
I mean, I didn't have any time with him in OTAs and minicamp, but I've had a short time with him here. And, you know, like you said, the big arm. You know, there's been times where there's tiny windows. He can literally throw it anywhere he wants to on the field. And that's a really exciting thing for a slot receiver, because the windows are small in there anyway.
So that kind of just goes against the whole accuracy argument, doesn't it? He can throw it wherever he wants on the field. He has the arm for it. And according to Cole Beasley, he has the accuracy to put the ball wherever he wants. So it's nice to see that a receiver like Cole Beasley, one of the best slot receivers in the game, has that confidence in his new quarterback that wherever he's going to be on the field, his quarterback is going to be able to get it to him. But then also we've got people tweeting that, especially at the red and blue practice, Allen kind of played hero ball when not too often, but he was more so looking to make the play down the field. He was still using checkdowns, but he was still trying to force plays and make plays that weren't there. So again, it's early. And you could attribute that to he was in front of a nearly full stadium and he was trying to put on a show for the fans in a meaningless practice. So hopefully it was that. But D'Lo, how do you feel about Allen's accuracy improving in that he is, you know, more often making the correct throw and using this check down and getting the ball to his receivers more accurately in general, but is still trying to play hero ball from time to time?
I mean, with respect to the passes underneath, I think Ken Dorsey's probably very helpful, having a real quarterback coach kind of guiding him through the system and getting through his progressions a little stronger and getting his feet under him and using the appropriate proper mechanics to get these balls, you know, into a good spot to let his players underneath make plays, make runs, you know, like Cole Beasley has been talking about. You know, you get an accurate throw on a slant, very short throw, and all of a sudden Beasley can pick up, you know, can get some first downs easily. Mm-hmm. That's one thing, and also I'm hopeful that he will continue to use the underneath game, because I feel like that eventually will open up the deep game.
Yeah.
Again, I think as he, you know, last year if you wanted to sit guys deep, you know, you could sit a couple safeties deep, and I mean, even with Allen's arm, is he going to be able to overthrow, you know, throw these like pretty much 50-50 balls to receivers last year? I mean, obviously there were times that, you know, when he broke contain and then all of a sudden receivers, you know, kind of ad-libbed. You saw receivers get open, and think about Robert Foster against Jacksonville. I think it was Jacksonville, mm-hmm. when he scored that big touchdown on Jalen Ramsey. So that works out. Once again, not overly concerned about playing hero ball right now. I mean, maybe it's something where, you know, it's almost a good thing that some of these balls aren't falling into place now, because then that won't be something that gets forced during games. If it works out now, then all of a sudden maybe we try it out and we try and force that ball in game conditions against a real defense, and then we have some issues. So I'm not, once again, I'm not overly concerned. I'm not overly stressed. I'm just hoping that we see a little bit more progression over the next few weeks.
Rich, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think going back to what you said and what D'Lo said about a new quarterbacks coach coming in there, I think it's promising to see that Allen is making those checkdowns and is looking for those better options rather than, you know, like you guys said, playing hero ball. You add a guy like David, you get rid of a guy like David Culley, who had more wide receiver experience than quarterback experience coaching, and you add someone like Ken Dorsey, who was with the Panthers and was with some would argue an elite quarterback with Cam Newton. Adding that type
MVP.
Of... MVP. Yeah, exactly. MVP went to the Super Bowl. You know, you have someone with that type of confidence coming in there, you're going to see some different looks from Allen. And, I mean, this is just a work in progress right now. And it's, I mean, going back to Cole Beasley on Good Morning Football talking about Allen and his accuracy, if you have a wide receiver out there that's not saying that, you know, you need that.
Yeah.
You need to maybe look elsewhere.
He had to say this, yeah.
You know, you want your one of your top receivers being your biggest advocate out there and giving you that confidence, not out there, you know, talking about the things you're doing wrong. But it is promising, though, to see that Ken Dorsey so far has made those changes, potentially, where, you know, with him and Dable working out things that Allen could do better and maybe hitting those passes that could have gotten the Bills maybe a couple extra wins last year, some better yardage. It's great to see that working out, and we'll see how that translates to the regular season, too.
Yeah, very true. I'm making it sound like Josh Allen just had an awful week and he regressed, which I don't think is the case. There were a lot of people tweeting that he had a few just very good deep balls and just played well in general. But also, like we've said, this is the time where you have to work out the inefficiencies and the shortcomings of your game. And it's not great to see that he's returning to old tendencies when it comes to hero ball, and he has this new thing where he can't consistently throw over the offensive line. We have the siren again. Jeez. I love it. Gotta love this podcast.
Hot take,
so,
hot take siren.
Hot take siren. No, Josh Allen. Oh,
I mean, I feel like
siren.
When we hear this, we might as well just have hot takes.
That should be all for right. Hot takes, yes.
Hot take. I'm overblowing it. Josh Allen's going to be fine. I don't even want to say bad. One not great week doesn't mean that all of the work he did in the offseason is gone. Like I said, we need something to talk about on the podcast. And I think he is going to take a massive step forward. I think he has taken steps forward in the offseason. And you can attribute the issues throwing it over the offensive line to the new offensive line. And I don't want to say it is the reason why he played hero ball at the practice, but he was in front of a fan base. He was in front of his fans. They didn't come to see checkdowns. They didn't.
That's true.
They came to see the deep balls to Robert Foster, to Cole Beasley, to John Brown, to Zay Jones. So let's not overblow this. I am the one overblowing this, and I'm telling myself to stop. So
that's right.
We will stop.
Look
that's
in the mirror and
the
say,
siren.
Cut it out.
the siren's telling me to stop. I still think Josh Allen. I still think he's good. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have a one poor week of training camp tell me he's not good anymore. So I think he's in for a big year. I think Cole Beasley's in for a good year. I think Bills are going 10-6, as I said last week. So, and one inadequate week of training camp is not going to stop that for me. So let's transition here. Let's go a little further into the offensive line. Mitch Morse. I don't think he's practiced yet at training camp. If so, it was only for a day or two. Back in concussion protocol. It is the fourth time in 5 years that Mitch Morse is in concussion protocol. Not great for a player who the Bills just made the highest paid center in the league. And he's in concussion protocol, his fourth in half a decade. So, D'Lo, what is going on? Why is this happening?
My big concern is the last time this offensive line was a little bit more competent a couple years ago is when Eric Wood was the center, right? So you had a veteran who was, you know, calling out blocking assignments, adjusting at the line of scrimmage. So once he retires, we have Russell Bodine/Bodine and Ryan Groy. And then all hell broke loose last year.
Yeah.
And I just feel like that was part of the problem, is that they didn't have that core leader to be able to call out blocking assignments, to make adjustments when needed. I mean, yes, we went from Tyrod Taylor to Josh Allen. There were other changes, but it just felt like the line was just consistently discombobulated. And that's an AP word right there. And
yeah.
You know, the idea of signing Morse, yes, they overpaid for him, but the idea was for the next 4 years, we're going to have a guy who's going to be solid in the middle, who can kind of work with Josh Allen, work with the line, keep everything organized, make necessary changes, help out with, you know, any, you know, line calls as necessary. And now that he goes down, now we're back to, you know, substitute teachers pretty much. Now we got John Feliciano, and, you know, he was knocked down, you know, a little bit at the red and blue practice. I mean, are we going to see Spencer Long, or are we going to see Bodine again? I mean, I think it's a little, it's hard to say it's a super big deal, because you're like, oh, it's just a center. I think it's going to be a big deal, especially with so many new parts in that offensive line, to have somebody who can really keep everything, you know, on the level, to be able to keep everybody on the same page in front of Josh Allen. And I think it might end up being a bigger problem if somehow Morris is not able to work with this line and work with this quarterback.
Yeah, and I don't even think that we should say that the Bills overpaid for him. He's one of the better centers in the league, and when a player of his caliber, one of the best in the league at his position, hits the open market, he's going to get a lot of money. That's just how it works. I don't think, yes, $44 million over, what, 4 years, is a lot of money for a center, but when that center just anchored the offensive line that helped a second-year quarterback win MVP, and you have a quarterback, I don't want to say with a similar skill set, but in that he's agile and can throw the deep ball, probably the best arm in the league, Josh Allen, that is. When you have a player that's not dissimilar to Patrick Mahomes, and you can go and get his center to anchor your offensive line, I think you do that no matter the price. And they did have to pay a steep price, but I don't think that's an overpay. But my issue is, with paying him just that much money with his concussion history, I think, I don't want to say that's a reckless spending of money, but there were other centers on the market. So Matt Paradis, that's another guy who was on the market. He ended up going to Carolina, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I know they were in talks with him. So I'm a little bit concerned, especially with this being his fourth concussion in 5 years. That's a bit concerning, because concussions last. If you want to relate it back to the Sabres, remember Tim Conley? That guy's whole career was he had all the talent in the world. Couldn't stay on the ice.
He had some sweet hands.
He did. He was incredibly talented, but he just couldn't stay on the ice because of his concussion history. So again, football, a very different sport than hockey, but Mitch Morse, he's gonna be, I mean, he plays in the trenches, that he can get a lot of concussions, and he has. And that's, playing center is not an easy job. Your head can get rocked around a lot when you're playing center. So I think I'm a little bit concerned about it. With the money, with the price tag, again, if he's healthy, I think that's a fair contract, and I think Mitch Morse will be the anchor of the offensive line, the thing that they've lacked since Eric Wood retired a few years ago, which I guess was only for a year, but still. But with this concussion history, I'm a little bit concerned. So, Rich, how do you feel about that?
You know, I'm concerned slightly, especially, you know, when you have your center. Your center is your brain, essentially a part of your brain on the offense. And when that person's brain is not in working function, like running smoothly, you're having concussions, that's not a great sign. If I were the Bills, I would honestly just have Mitch Morse play maybe in that third preseason game, one series, and then kind of rest him the rest of the time and have him work exclusively with Josh Allen to build that chemistry and with the offensive line, looking at film and in meetings, trying to know that, you know, understand exactly what's going on in every single play so that he's ready for week one. I just don't think it's worth the risk to even have him out there for most of that preseason right now. You don't want that guy that you made the highest paid center in the league out there potentially getting another concussion when he's so you know, he's had four already in five seasons. It is concerning, but I think that this will all be forgotten in a couple months.
Yeah, and that's a very good point you bring up. Mitch Morris isn't the type of guy who really needs to condition in training camp and preseason. He knows what he's doing. He's very good. Like I've said, one of the best centers in the league. But I guess the bigger concern there is just the chemistry amongst the offensive line. They need to gel. We saw last year, the offensive line never gelled. And that's why the line was, I'll say they were awful. The entire line was bad throughout the majority of the year. Bodian was bad. Wyatt Teller was bad. I've had people in my mentions telling me that Wyatt Teller is a lock to make the roster. Watch the games. Just because he has long hair doesn't mean that he's a lock to make the roster, people. And he even cut his hair. So there you go. Deion Dawkins regressed in his second year. I think he's looking to take another step forward this year, which if he doesn't, the Bills might be looking for a new left tackle, to be honest. But because you don't want your left tackle to be the weak spot on your offensive line. You just don't. That's a big issue. Ideally, you'd like the left tackle to be your best lineman just because he's protecting the blind side more often than not, unless you have a right-hand or a left-handed quarterback. But you want your left tackle to be that guy who can block whatever defensive end he's on, but Deion Dawkins wasn't that guy last year. And then John Miller and Jordan Mills, they both left this offseason, so that tells you how effective they were last season. So Mitch Morris, like I just said, he's going to be good no matter what, but you want the line around him to gel, and it's going to be hard for the line to develop that chemistry when the anchor is not playing, when the anchor is on the sidelines. So hopefully they can develop that chemistry in the room with Coach Bobby Johnson. You would hope that they can develop that chemistry just talking to each other and going over film, but you need the reps. You need to develop that chemistry by playing with each other. So hopefully Mitch Morris comes back from this quickly and they're able to develop the line around him and establish who's going to play, because that's still all over the place right now with injuries and just seeing who should be starting. But hopefully, like you said, Rich, by week three, they're able to have the line set in place and they're able to play a quarter or two of football together, just real football together, not training camp, just real full speed football. And they're the sirens.
Another siren.
Guys,
hot take.
This yeah. would suggest I live in Oakland. This podcast would suggest I live in Oakland. I live in suburban Buffalo. This is abnormal, and it just so happens to be happening right now.
House, man.
Dude, what if they were? What if they're like, out. You said Josh Allen isn't accurate. You're going to jail. your crime is akin to eating chicken wings with ranch in Buffalo. But
that's true.
So
punishable by death.
I guess what I'm trying to say here is I'm concerned with Mitch Morris. He has all the talent in the world, as much talent as a center can have. That sounded very rude, but Mitch Morris, he's a very good center. He's a very
he's
good
talented
center.
For a center.
Put him at left guard and we'll have a different conversation. But no, Mitch Morris is very good. And like we've said, like you said, Rich, he kind of has to be the brain of the offensive line. And when your brain, when your, oh my God.
Your brain's brain.
When the centerpiece of the line, the listeners probably can't even hear the sirens, but I'll try to, instead of editing them out, I'm just going to raise the volume so they know what we're aggravated about. But when the centerpiece of your line, when the brain of your line isn't there, that's a concern. And with having four concussions in 5 years, the concern is that he's not going to be there even if it's just for a few weeks, or if these concussions continue, that could force an early retirement. It could. And that's not ideal when you're paying him a lot of money over 4 years. So, yeah, I would like to think that this is just going to go away, but when it's been an issue throughout his entire career, I can't be confident that the concussions are just going to stop. And once you get one concussion, it's easier to get the next, and he's had four. So I'm concerned. I really am. I think he's very good, but I don't know how available he's going to be. And you can have all the talent in the world, but the best ability is availability. So I hope he's I hope he gets it figured out.
That was good.
Thank you. I heard that from one Aaron Quinn on an old episode of the Bills Wire podcast.
I love that.
Remember when Aaron Quinn was here? I miss Aaron
Throwback.
Quinn. Good guy. But so I is that all the Mitch Morse discussion? Anyone else have anything to say about Mitch Morse?
Go Bills.
No. Okay.
All right. Hey, let's talk about Duke Williams.
Yeah, let's talk about Duke Williams. We have a good Duke Williams conversation here. So he's still a non-factor. We said last week after he wasn't great when he didn't have pads on, wait till he gets pads on. Maybe he'll be good because he's a physical receiver. Now they have pads on and he's still been kind of a non-factor. AP contributor Mark Ludwizak. Is that? It's a Polish last name. Mark Ludwizak. That's what we're going to go with. No, Rich, you have a Polish last name. How do you pronounce that?
Probably Mark Ludwizak.
Ludwizak. Oh, Lud. I gave it a bit of a...
You gave it a little ooh. Swedish.
Yeah. Ooh, Ludwizak.
Ludwizak.
Yeah. But,
you
so...
just love taking everything back to that Hofbrauhaus sounding name.
God, dude, let's just cancel the rest of the podcast and just talk about Hofbrauhaus.
The Kyle Selegli. The Kyle
Selegli. Selegli.
Kyle Selegli. Hofbrauhauer.
That Hofbrauhauer. Rolls off the tongue. Hofbrauhauer.
Hofbrauhauer.
Nice.
That's good. All right, no. We'll talk about Duke Williams because people don't care about Hofbrauhaus.
Yeah.
Even Hofbrauhaus doesn't care about Hofbrauhaus because they haven't opened in 2 years. But anyway. yeah. AP contributor Mark Ludwizak tweeted that he doesn't think Williams is an NFL receiver. He's been at camp and he's been watching him play. Doesn't see an NFL skill set in him, which I think the Los Angeles Rams came to that conclusion a few years ago when they cut him out of camp. But that is something that's interesting. When you have a player who was as prolific in the CFL as he was, to come here, to come to Buffalo, or just to the NFL in general, and not be able to make that adjustment like that, that's, I guess that could be expected. I remember having a conversation with my friend after the Bills signed Duke Williams, and he said he could be their number one receiver. He really could be. And then I was like,
no.
There is a better chance of Williams being off the week one roster than there is of him being the number one receiver.
Better chance of him playing cornerback than...
True. And he's like, oh, no. One. He's like, oh, no, you're wrong. You're wrong. And I was like, no. He hasn't done anything in the NFL. He was good in the CFL. You know who else is good in the CFL? Naaman Roosevelt, who, I mean, Bills fans will remember Naaman Roosevelt was a non-factor here. But just... to go a little further into Duke Williams here, hasn't really impressed. I guess he's had one or two good plays throughout the few weeks of camp now, and that's not going to secure you a roster spot. According to a lot of guys at training camp, according to a lot of reporters, there's been six receivers that have separated themselves from the pack, and they're Cole Beasley, John Brown, Zay Jones, Robert Foster, Andre Roberts at receiver, not just as a returner, but at receiver, and then Ray McLeod, who's kind of been the training camp darling thus far. So they've been the six guys who have separated themselves from the pack, leaving guys like Duke Williams, Isaiah McKenzie, David Sills, Nick Easley's kind of come on, but even him, he hasn't had the first team reps. So those six guys have had the first team reps, and the other guys haven't, I don't want to say they haven't had the opportunity to impress, but when they've had those opportunities, they haven't seized them. They haven't taken hold of the opportunity and really impressed. So just we'll go to you, Rich. Duke Williams, is he could come on in the preseason? He could, but as of right now, do you see them keeping him on the 53-man roster despite his limited production at camp just because he's a big body?
I don't see them keeping him on the roster. I mean, they're not to overuse the phrase, but there's too many cooks in the kitchen right now in that wide receiver room. You have a lot of guys that you brought in, and kind of figuring out which ones are going to make it, which ones aren't. And it seems like right now the Bills are coming to that same conclusion the Rams did a couple years ago, where they had Duke Williams on their preseason roster, and he didn't end up making the squad. So it might just be that he doesn't have that NFL-type receiver, you know, receiving ability. You know, you can do well in the CFL, but it really, really matters, though, how you translate that from college and the CFL to the NFL. And right now, you're just not seeing that come through. And yeah, it might change in the preseason. You know, he could end up putting up some good numbers, but, you know, maybe third, fourth quarter action. But I honestly don't think the Bills are going to wind up keeping him beyond a preseason.
D'Lo, any Duke Williams hot takes?
I see him lighting up a fourth string cornerback from Indianapolis.
Exactly.
I mean, I think at the blue and red practice, yeah. I don't think he received a target during the game time. I don't think he really impressed at all on many drills from what I've read online. Which would be opposed to in a book. From what I've seen online.
True. No books published on the Bills blue and red practice. No books.
I didn't realize that was going to come out like that, but it did. So, but yeah, he's struggling to separate. He's not really a burner. He's not really getting away from any of our secondary players. He's not creating any space. It's just not happening. Of those, you know, the six aforementioned players that you discussed earlier in the receiver room, they're going to be, that's really your top six right now. And then it just depends on, do they want to keep McLeod as the sixth?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, yeah. That's it. Williams, unfortunately, like, he's an intriguing guy. His story's very interesting, and it's great to see him, you know, hopefully kind of get over some of the demons from college, but it's not going to work out here. It's not working out in Buffalo right now.
Yeah, you say he's not a burner, which, absolutely not. Speed has never been his game. His game has always been go up and get it. Throw him the 50-50 ball and he will just outwork the cornerback. He's got that physical mindset where he will come down with the ball more often than not. And that play style's not really suited for training camp.
Yeah.
It's not. So that could be a reason why he's not just tearing it up and making a huge impact. So I think he is a candidate to be a breakout guy in preseason. Just when it's real football, when he's playing another team, it'll be Matt Barkley or Tyree Jackson throwing him those 50-50 balls. But if he gets his targets, I could see him breaking out. But as of right now, he's been a disappointment. This is a guy that a lot of people had high hopes for entering training camp. There were a lot of people curious about Duke Williams, what he could bring to the team. And as of right now, it doesn't look like he's bringing much of anything, which, It's a bit disappointing. It is, because there were a lot of people who thought he was going to be that physical target that the Bills needed, and to counteract the John Brown, the Cole Beasley, the Robert Foster, the Zay Jones to an extent, who's not the most physical receiver. Duke Williams brings something different to that receiving core, and he hasn't brought it thus far. So hopefully in training camp he's able to showcase his more physical ability, his physical skill set, but thus far he hasn't, and that could change, but we'll see. So guys, we have our last topic before we get into Buffalo Fight Night, everyone's favorite segment of the show, the fans' favorite segment. So we'll get into that in a few seconds here, but first we'll talk about Ed Oliver. He's still good. I said last week he's my biggest takeaway from training camp thus far, and I think that continues. No matter who they're putting in front of him, no matter if he's with the first or the second team, he's just tearing through the line. So that could speak to his talent. That could speak to just...
Sorry, yes. I was hoping the siren would happen with Duke Williams when you were talking about him, you know, possibly stepping up throughout the physical nature of preseason, but...
just a few seconds
apparently
too late.
Ed Oliver's success is a hot take.
Yeah. It's a convenience more than it is at this point. It's telling me when I need to hotten my take a little bit. So, Ed Oliver, he's just been rolling through the linemen. And again, that could speak to his talent or just the revolving door that's been on the line that he's just able. It's literally been a revolving door when Ed Oliver's out there. But again, he's just showcasing his skill set. Just no matter who he's matched up against, he's rolling through them and getting into the backfield, whether to take down the quarterback or to take down the running back. So that's good. I think we're all fans of Ed Oliver here. We've all been fans of Ed Oliver when he was there at number 9. On draft night, I was in the media room, and I was leaning over to my former colleague, Nate Mendelson, who has blown up on Twitter. He's killing the Twitter game. He truly is. But I remember saying, I was like, hey, if they get Ed Oliver, this defense, I mean, they improved the defense over Kyle Williams. They really did. And Ed Oliver was sitting there. He was, and I was amazed. Again, I try to stay objective, but when Ed Oliver was there, I was like, good. That's a good move. That's a very good pick. So, and he's showing that he was a very good pick in training camp thus far, but he became public enemy number 1 in Buffalo when he bruised Josh Allen. He gave him a bruise on his leg.
Didn't he see the red jersey?
Apparently he didn't. So here's what happened. He was at camp. I think he pushed a lineman. He got a little emotional. Pushed a lineman into Josh Allen, and Josh Allen fell boom boom. He fell down. And Josh Allen had a bruise on his – he has a bruise on his leg. And then Ed Oliver got kicked out of practice. They said, you're out of here, Ed Oliver. Keep your emotions in check.
The umpire ejected him.
Yeah, the umpire.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And then Ed Oliver threw his hat.
Kicked some dirt.
Threw his put a hat on, threw it down.
Picked up a base and threw it.
Stole the pylon, yeah.
If you guys will remember from last year, there was an incident where he was wearing a jacket on the sideline at Houston. And his coach said, don't wear the jacket. And he got mad. He was like, I'm going to wear the jacket. And that's the transcript from the fight, exactly. But no, there was a huge jacket incident where he went off on his coach because his coach said he couldn't wear a jacket. So he's an emotional player. Very talented, but he's an emotional guy. So I'll go to you, Rich. If he can't keep his emotions in check in practice and he's pushing linemen, you like to see that viciousness and that aggressiveness. But if he can't keep his emotions in check against his own teammates in practice, are we concerned about the regular season?
No. Okay. Because he's just going to be doing this to the other team. And when you're in a full game and you're playing against someone like the Patriots, you almost want someone like this where they're aggressive and they're not going to take anything from anyone. And I'm not worried. I mean, yeah, it's kind of silly to be doing that against your own team in practice when things get heated, but they're still bonding. All these things are going to squash out and hopefully, but all these things are going to work themselves out, and you build that chemistry and you realize you're on the same team during a real game, and hopefully that doesn't occur during the season. You know, we don't see another type Jerry Hughes attitude on the defensive line, but I don't think it's anywhere close to going to be like that. I think it'll be fine.
Jerry Hughes' mentor?
This strikes me as something McDermott would like, to be honest. I think he likes aggressive players. He likes passionate players. But he doesn't want it to interfere and affect the game in that they're getting penalties and losing yardage. So, and I think if Ed Oliver gets in an argument over a jacket on the sideline in Buffalo, well, no. I mean, McDermott's going to be like, yeah, it's cold. Wear a jacket.
We're not going to have to worry about that. Put on your hat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Put on your toque. But, yeah, he's Canadian now. Sean McDermott's Canadian, guys. But wow. No. Ed Oliver, again, like I said, I think this is something you want to see. I like aggressiveness in players. I like passion. And, again, it's not ideal that it's resulting in bruises on Josh Allen's leg, but it's good to see. It's good to see that he's, like you said, Rich, he's not going to take any bull. He's going to get involved. He's going to be an involved player, a passionate player, an emotional player. So it's good to see that even in training camp, he's not taking reps off. He's either bowling through the offensive line or he's getting mad that he didn't make the play in training camp. So imagine what he's going to do during the regular season. So that'll be fun to see. Of course, if he's able to pull himself in and keep himself contained and not push over linemen after the play in regular season. So that's good to see. D'Lo, anything to add on Ed Oliver here?
No, I mean, these guys are just showing that they're trying to prove themselves, fighting for jobs. Passion's good. I'm good with it. Go 91.
Exactly. Go 91. But guys, something came up. As I was doing that little Ed Oliver chat there, D'Lo sent something in the chat, and it's on my number one player, best player on the defense. It's Daryl Johnson. The Athletic wrote this a few weeks ago, a few days ago,
on the second.
And it wasn't The Athletic; it was an Athletic writer. Who was it? Fairburn or Biscali?
Both of them are cited as the authors.
Okay, so it was both of them. They contributed to write this. They have their own podcast. Teamwork. Now they're teaming up on articles. Here's what they wrote about Daryl Johnson. And this is going to get taken down because I'm reading stuff behind a paywall, but hey, let's go for it. He might be a few years from reaching his full potential, but keep an eye on defensive end Daryl Johnson, the Bills' seventh-round pick. He was one of two seventh-round picks, but we're getting into semantics. His explosiveness off the ball isn't normal for a player drafted that late. It's abnormal, people. He still has to fill out his frame and add strength, but Johnson has the traits to be successful in the NFL. His best play of the practice came during goal line drills when he drove LaAdrian Waddle backward to help force a run stop. Johnson has inherent pass rush upside given how twitchy he is as an athlete. If his run defense can catch up, he'll be a nice find for the Bills. I've been saying this for months on the Kyle Selege Variety Hour, that Daryl Johnson is too valuable of an asset to put on the practice squad. He is just, he's an abnormal athlete, as they said. Again, he's 6'6", 250, and he's even put on muscle over the offseason. I think he played at like 6'6", 220 last year. So he's put on 30 pounds of muscle. I don't know if you wanted to fill out his frame farther than that, but if he can put on more muscle, go for it. And just, yeah, like I said, he was dominant at North Carolina A&T. He won Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference Defensive Player of the Year honors last year. And he's just, I like Daryl Johnson. I really think he's, like I've said, he's too valuable of an asset to put on the practice squad. Looking at his frame, his talent, his ability to get after the quarterback, just, as they said, inherent pass rush ability. Even if he doesn't, like, blow up at training camp, even if he doesn't get, in the preseason and get multiple sacks, I think he's going to make the 53-man roster just because you don't want him on the practice squad. You don't want a team to be able to sign him at whenever they want. So, guys, anything to add now that I'm being proven right about Daryl Johnson? Thanks for that response, guys.
This could be
I mean, we both had.
It could be our 2019 Matt Milano.
Yeah. I think we all had him too on our final roster projections when we were doing the 53-man roster. We all emphatically pretty much stated that Daryl Johnson is too talented to leave off the roster.
Yes, we did. But then Bills Wire, my peers, Nick Wotan, Jeremy Uhas, Bradley Gelber, they published their roster predictions and they don't have Daryl Johnson on the roster. Mm. It's the disrespect. It's stuff like that, man, that just... I can't get no respect. I can tell them that Daryl Johnson is good, but they don't listen. But hey, when Daryl Johnson gets 20 sacks in his rookie year, come see me. Come talk to me. I'll be here and I'll just tell you I told you so. So I think that's it for the Daryl Johnson talk here. So we'll get into the best segment this show has ever come up with. The best segment to ever happen on this show. It's Buffalo Fight Night, where we discuss the scuffles that have happened at training camp thus far. And we discuss who would win in a sanctioned MMA fight in the octagon. Last week we discussed, what were the fights last week? Where they were
Hyde and Knox.
Hyde and Knox. We said Hyde easily. And then McCoy and Edmonds, which again was an easy one. So today we have two underwhelming fights. But one fight is kind of, it would be a knockout within the first 10 seconds. But it's a high-profile guy. So first off, we have Ray McLeod versus Dean Marlowe. The training camp standout versus Dean Marlowe. So, Rich, who would win in that fight?
I'm going to go with a surprise here. I'm going to go with Ray McLeod. I think he's quick. He's fast. I think he is. Dean Marlowe won't be able to keep up with him. Dean Marlowe has a I think it's like a 3-inch height advantage, but... Ray McLeod, he's got that nice afro going on right now. He's got that swagger. I think he just ends up, kicking his
A Floyd Mayweather type, if you will.
In ways.
In ways, and that he's shifty.
Not in every way, though. We don't want to. We don't want to go that down that.
Pump the brakes on that one.
D'Lo.
I go with the defensive player, Dean Marlowe. He's got him by like 3 or 4 inches, 15-20 pounds.
Okay.
That's it.
Rich, you sold me. I'm going to go with McLeod.
Really?
Hey, yes.
I should be a promoter.
You should. You sold me on him easily with the afro. You could put the afro on posters. You could. But no, McLeod is smaller. He's shifty. That's kind of his whole game, is that he's a shifty guy. So put him in the octagon. Maybe you've got a real star in the making there. I'm going to start calling him Money McLeod.
Oh,
Ray Money McLeod, like Money Mayweather. So
I could have Dean Money Marlowe.
Yeah, but you didn't compare him to Money Mayweather. You can compare him to Money Mayweather right now, and then you can call him Money Marlowe.
Fun with alliteration.
Yeah, exactly. So now, the main event. The number one fight, the fight that everyone paid to see. It's John Feliciano versus Ed Oliver. This scuffle unfolded. I think Ed Oliver just kind of pinned him to the ground after a rep and started throwing punches, which is, again, another reason why he's an emotional player. But, yeah, we really don't have to discuss this, but D-Lo, who do you got?
I mean, even though Oliver is down by, I don't know, 30, 40 pounds on this one, I think Oliver can do this.
Yeah.
I'm saying Oliver in a knockout.
Yeah. Ed Oliver is a very, I'll say, athletic and fit individual.
Passionate.
He's quite muscular. There were people before the draft saying that he could play defensive end or linebacker, wherever. I mean, he could be an MMA fighter, too. He's just, he's a huge guy, and he's just strong. And honestly, I think I'd say Ed Oliver could probably beat anyone on the roster in an MMA fight. I don't know who I would pick over Oliver. I think Edmonds would give him a run for his money, but I think I'd still go Oliver. Anyone have any suggestions as to
Steven Hauschka?
Steven Hauschka would be a great fight. Jerry Hughes, that'd be a good fight, but I still think Oliver would win. Daryl Johnson would beat anyone. Okay, so I've been proven
wrong.
Tyree
Jackson putting up a good fight. He's a big
dude. Tyree Jackson would be a good MMA fighter. You're right. I'm only saying that because he's tall, but I think
analysis.
What if we had like a special teams fight between like Hauschka
and Maurice Alexander?
Like,
that would be great.
Cody Bohorquez.
Yes.
Oh, who would win that?
Kicker versus punter.
Guys, Reed Ferguson would be good in this.
I'd say
ever gotten a fight.
Cody Bohorquez would win. I don't think Hauschka would want his teeth getting all messed up. He's a former dental student. He cares about those puppies. I think he'd just be afraid to fight. He's too nice, too. I don't think he'd want to fight.
Yeah, they both seem like just genuine, nice guys.
We also have Corey Carter on the roster, too, right?
Yeah. We do, yeah.
So this is getting bigger, but we might have to have a tournament.
That's how they decide the punter battle in the octagon. Carter versus Bohorquez, battle of the Corey.
No. It happens on McDermott's wrestling a mat.
Yes.
They have to wear
before the,
they have to wear a wrestling singlet and they have to wear the stuff on their ears and they have to
absolutely
go at it.
McDermott officiates. Oh yeah.
Would he be a good? McDermott would just let it go. I don't think he'd be a fair officio or a fair referee, if you will.
I don't know.
He would just let him battle. Yep. Once we get training camp credentials, that'll be our first question.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean.
Hypothetical fight.
Yeah. I'll pull the Sal Marana. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Yeah. That. he starts every question with, "Hey, Sean." So I would say, "Hey, Sean. Hypothetically, if you were an MMA referee, would you be fair or would you be always in there trying to separate him?" And then we'll get kicked out very quickly. So, I think that does it for this week's Variety Hour. We've had some good conversations. We overblew a Josh Allen story. We talked about Mitch Morse. We talked about Duke Williams, and we did a lot of Ed Oliver talk. And Daryl Johnson, everyone's jumping on the hype train. So I'll let you guys jump on because I'm driving it. So that does it. Rich, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at @ByRichKowalski on Twitter.
Nice. Are you working on any stellar pieces over at the Bills Wire?
Nothing in the works currently, but once this preseason gets started, you'll see some stuff out there.
D'Lo, how about you? Both questions.
They can find me at @JDeLauro on the Twitter. And this week, I'm just going to be working on some fun stuff leading into the Indianapolis game.
Nice. Gotta love it. You can follow me on Twitter, @KyleSelege. You can follow Bills Wire on Twitter, @TheBillsWire, on Facebook, @BillsWire, on Instagram, @TheBillsWire. I got them right this time. I didn't last week, but hey, second time's the charm. You can listen to the Bills Wire podcasts. They're on iTunes, Spotify, whatever. Hosted by Matt and Jeremy. They do good work over there on the podcast. Matt just had his podcast convention, his PodCon, he was on the news. I was just watching the news, and there's Matt Johnson, Bills Wire podcast host. And I was like, oh, wow, I know that guy. So big ups to him for doing that. So, yeah, make sure you read the articles. Make sure you listen to all the podcasts. And thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.